Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio. 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere for free on that Odyssey app. You can download that app anywhere. You get your favorite apps for your phone, the Google Play Store, your Apple App Store. You can also get us on your smart speaker. Just ask those little suckers to play WILK News Radio, and it will, just like that, live. How's everyone doing today? It is beautiful, 81 degrees, 308 on this Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. I do apologize for yesterday due to unforeseen circumstances. We had to play best of, but here we are. And lots of news to talk about, a lot of things going on. And the guests that I had scheduled for yesterday, Applewood Farms, I'm going to have those great people in on Thursday because they are truly going to give you some great information about farming in Northeast Pennsylvania. They are a multi-generational farm, locally sourced meat, and an event they have coming up. So it's going to be a great learning experience. Every time I talk to our American farmers or ranchers, you learn something. They truly love the land. They are the stewards of the land. They caretake it for us and make sure that our groceries are stocked. And a lot of people, you'd be amazed this day and age how people just think, you know, meat and vegetables and everything just kind of pop up at the grocery store. And there's not a ton of work behind it by people like our American farmers and ranchers. So we're going to have them in on Thursday. We got Tuesdays with Tommy coming up today at 4 o'clock. But there's a lot of stuff that went on that I wanted to get into. I was looking to get into it yesterday. Some of it, the information about these things were updated. But listen, as a parent of three children, grown now, but I realize how hard and how nerve-wracking parenting is. You add shootings between not even teenagers, and that escalates to a panic level. And that's what we saw this weekend in Oliphant, where we saw a huge police response, and kudos to those in law enforcement from multi-jurisdictionals. Pretty much this was an all-hands-on-deck where there was a report of a 12-year-old that was shot. The alleged suspects in this case were, 13, 14, 15 years old. That's what the information was given out now. We do know now that it was a 14-year-old boy who shot a 12-year-old Sunday night in Oliphant. And I was keyed into this early on when it was happening. I did post something on social media, and I do post those general, with very general information. I said there was a shooting in this area, juveniles allegedly involved, please stay away from the area. That's what I posted. And that's really all you're going to get from me while the situation is ongoing. While our men and women in law enforcement from all over the place were responding, setting up perimeters, searching for what was indeed an armed suspect. Not only an armed suspect, but a juvenile armed suspect who, as we know, doesn't have a rational thought process yet. That's why they are young adults. That's why they're teenagers. That's why it's our job as parents to be involved in every aspect of their life. And even more so here. And we don't know the stories. I know there's information that they attended Valley View, or at least some of them did, Valley View School District. And this has nothing to do with the school district. It just happens to be where they went. None of this took place on school district grounds. But, I mean, from the people who live in that area that I know that were reaching out to me with real-time information, A, I appreciate that. But, as you're aware, we're just not going to put that stuff out real-time while the police are actively searching and their lives are in danger, while this scene is very much active. But it's a scary situation as we move forward with this, as we try to break this down. And we will get some more information. We won't get a lot of details because of, at this point, being juveniles. It appears that there will be some sort of move to charge this individual as adults. We don't really know the primary roles of the other two individuals that were arrested. Were they simply acting in concert? Did they take an active participation in it? That's going to matter when it comes down to who's charging an adult, whose names get released. The last I heard, the 12-year-old boy was critical but stable condition, which is a good sign. Not out of the woods yet, still critical but stable, but that stable part gives us a lot of information as far as where they where this moves forward. As far as gang affiliation, you know, there's been chatter of it. I have seen nothing from official sources on that. But you have to wonder where kids this age, firearm involved, it's a very good possibility. But until we, again, we have to be guided by the authorities here. They will, and I have confidence in the district attorney of Lackawanna County and who's handling this investigation. You know, law enforcement can only give so much information, and this is in the district attorney's hand now. But I have complete faith that they will handle this the proper way, hold this juvenile to the full extent of the law, hopefully charge them as an adult. Listen, I don't care if you're 14. You bring a firearm. You make the conscious effort to get a firearm, however it was acquired. I don't care. But you make the conscious effort to get one, possess it, bring it to some place that either there's a potential for a conflict or you're looking for a conflict. Take that firearm out, display it, and shoot a 12-year-old boy. I'm sorry, you need to be held accountable. You need to be held as an adult. You need to be charged as an adult. And I did see a lot of back and forth on social media. Well, the parents need to be arrested too. Well, let the investigation take place. Listen, parents need accountability. Parents themselves, and that's where I'm going to focus on today, before something like this even becomes a thought in anyone's mind, it is up to you or I as parents. And I did the best I could as a parent of three children. And I know a lot of you out there do the best you can. I know a lot of you may be grandparents raising your grandkids because of whatever the situation may be. I know there's a lot of single parents out there. It starts there. It starts with monitoring and trying to do everything you can to get between what happened this Sunday and before then. Be that blockade. Cut it off. Intercede messages, intercede internet activity where you might have a clue, where you're going to have to be the enforcer. You're going to have to be the bad guy or girl, mom or dad, whatever that is. I would much rather be known as the too strict of a parent. My dad, you know, he's overbearing and he's a jerk sometimes, than visiting my child after he shot a 12-year-old through a plexiglass window. I will do that any day, any age. And I know most of you will. And I know people who have had family members and children arrested who have said that directly to me. I wish I had the courage. I wish I had the knowledge to do something sooner. And the people I'm talking to now are the ones that you do have that opportunity. And I don't know anything about these children. And that's what they are. They're children. I don't know what their upbringing is. I don't know what race they are. I don't know what their background is, what their financial demographic is. Every parent out there, because we've seen this with spoiled, rich teenagers. We've seen this with kids from the ghetto or from the projects or wherever that may be, or just kids raised in unfortunate circumstances of all backgrounds, of all financial status, get involved in this very same stuff. So every parent out there really needs to. If your child is under 18 and you're paying for a cell phone, if you're supporting everything about their life, you need to be involved in that life. You need to be the barrier between the internet and that child, between gangs and that child, between bad influence and your child. And now's the time for people who says, well, not my child. My child would never be involved with something like that. How do you know what your child is involved in unless you're actually seeing it with your own two eyes? Hopefully they are. Hopefully they all are. But we all know, if you want to be honest with yourself, our kids do things that we don't approve of when we don't know about them in one way or another. It could be something minor. It could be something as tragic as this. But it's our job to be involved in that discussion, to be that roadblock, to be that speed bump to where you could catch it before it gets to something like this. You have a community in fear now. This entire community. I've spoken to people there. You know, they were that night. People were out videotaping the helicopter in the air with the spotlight. Well, there's an armed, unpredictable 14-year-old running around that was being cornered by our local law enforcement. Not a smart idea. I mean, that in itself goes to show how, you know, are we all thinking in a focused manner here. You know, while police are in an investigation, people stopping them to ask him, you know, is it, you know, what's going on? Is it all good? You know, can we come out now? People locking their doors and securing their, locating their children and making sure they were okay. We're in just a new dynamic in this day and age. I mean, who would have thought a 14-year-old would have shot a 12-year-old, an elephant? I mean, anyone an elephant. Anyone in that surrounding area, Dixon City, Archibald, Einan, anyone around there, would you have concepted this, had a conception of this? But it happened now. And as parents, hopefully not involved with this situation, but definitely concerned and maybe startled is a good thing. Get involved with your children's life. If your children are under 18, and I understand between 16 and 18, there has to be some sort of boundaries. There has to be some sort of trust. But if your child is under 16, you should be fully involved with every electronic platform that they have. And by fully involved, I mean total access. And I'm not saying that this even played a role here, but it is a warning sign. These kids do text each other. They WhatsApp each other. They Snapchat each other. You should have the passwords for all of that. And you should have those apps downloaded on your phone to where you could log in as well. So if one of their friends sends them a message, you're getting the message. And you know what? You're checking their phone on a weekly basis to make sure they didn't set up another account on that same platform. Let them tell their friends, hey, my mom or dad monitors this. So they're watching what they do as well that they send to your child. There is not a single reason anyone out there can explain to me why their child under 16 has access to something on social media that you as the parent can't view. You cannot justify that. You cannot explain that to me. I'm telling you right now, if you do not have complete access or at minimal doing spot checks on your children, you're opening up to the world that's looking to take them in a wrong direction, because there is that out there. I've seen the most straightforward, honest, good-graded child be manipulated by peer pressure, by friends, by wanting to belong, by girls or boys that influence them. They are being bombarded every second of every day. And as parents, we have a finite amount of time to protect them. How often is your child right in front of you? Today, now. How often today is your child right in front of you where you could say, I have control of my child. I know he's safe. He or her is safe. I know nothing's going to happen to them right now. They are being bombarded by the world every second of every day. And if you take the time that you're actually there to protect them from that bombardment, it's not very much. So we have to do the best we can. We have to instill the best ethics and morals into them. We have to make it understood from the start that there will be checks on their social media, that you will be monitoring it, that you will be protecting them. They don't like it tough. They think you're mean or you're bad or you're a jerk. Tough. It's my parent. It's my job as a parent. I'm your parent. And until you have a child, they could never comprehend the amount of love we have for them and the amount of fear we carry every second of every day for them. And that needs to be explained to them. And you need to tell them that you cannot even comprehend. I could tell you all day. You will never comprehend how much your parents love you until you have a child of your own. And then it starts to dawn on you. And then that worrying starts. And that worrying gets bigger. And that fear gets stronger. And your anxiety grows because more and more of the world is surrounding your child. And it doesn't stop. It never stops. We learn to manage it maybe better once they're, you know, in their 20s and they're living their own life. But it never goes away. My children are 29, 23 and 22. And I'll tell you right now, it never goes away. And it never will. My child could be 45. I'm still going to worry. Still going to have concerns. they go someplace that I think is not going to be safe, I'm still going to be concerned, and I'm still going to voice that. Obviously, they're their own person, and they can make their own decisions, but I'm not going to let something happen and say I knew something, or I had a feeling, or I thought something, or I wanted to give advice, and it was ungiven, it was unsaid. So, the people of this area, I understand the anxiety and the fear you're going through, and the best thing I could tell you to help correct this situation, get that open dialogue with your children. Speak to them. Make sure they feel comfortable coming to you. If one of their friends is doing something that they think is wrong, they need to come to you. It's your job to protect your child. And that's what I got today. It's 3:23 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show in just a minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 320, almost 3:27 here, 83 degrees. So, we're going to go from one part of the county to the other, but it's still... Yeah, listen, I used to do this for a living, and story after story coming out like this is just like, what's going on? And, these things happen, and sometimes they happen in bunches, and it doesn't set up a pattern or obviously anything like that. But a burning body of Schuylkill County woman found leads police to search a home for evidence in Hazleton. So it came across as a mannequin on fire. And I guess when the fire department got there, they found that it was, in fact, a human that was on fire. Police are now investigating this grisly discovery. Again, Sunday morning in Luzerne County now. Hazleton Fire Department was on the scene. Hopefully, they're doing okay because, I know they deal with this, but when you get a routine call for a mannequin on fire, especially with all the brush fires and wildfires that are going on, they show up, they're not expecting it. All of a sudden, it's a body. That could take a toll on you. Officials identified the body as a Schuylkill County woman on Monday, set ablaze about 7 a.m. along Club 40 Road. Obviously, Hazleton City Police were called. They partially closed off the road. It is a crime scene. Local resident said that she woke to police knocking on the door, saying they're asking me for any security camera footage. Or footage they may have, if you do have any, especially if anything like this happens around your house, check your Ring doorbells, check your security cameras. It is a great asset to law enforcement. You may think, I'm a couple blocks away, I didn't catch anything. You'd be amazed of how much we do get from that. One of the standard operating procedures for crime scenes in New York City, and it was a mandatory, is you assign someone to take every license plate of every vehicle on that block and every block a block away in every direction. Because if someone parked their car, sometimes say, I'm not going to park my car right where I'm going to do the crime. I'm going to park a block away. Or possible witnesses. And you had to contact every owner of every one of those vehicles to see if they knew anything, saw anything. Somebody would run those if there were anything of suspicion. And if any names popped up from past crimes similar to the one you're investigating, well, it raises your intuition just a little bit more. The death investigation led police to a home along the 100 block of Murrah Avenue in Hazleton City. They confirmed that the home is tied to an ongoing death investigation. Heavily armed police, as a precaution, search for evidence was there to do an entry. Hazleton City Police Criminal Investigation Unit, along with the Pennsylvania State Police, will investigate this unit. Now, you have to look into many aspects of this. What entity burns bodies? Once you have an identity, which it appears they have, of the individual, why did this occur? The nature of the violence of the attack on the person also often leads to motive. If, a lot of domestic assaults, domestic murders, or someone who shows that they are extremely angry or passionate against someone, a lot more force is often used. Gangs, certain gangs, often cut off certain appendages and set bodies on fire. So you need to look into all reasoning behind this. Was it used to just destruct a you know, a novice thinking that they could destruct the evidence of the body. I don't understand at 7 o'clock in the morning how setting a body on fire, you think you're going to draw less attention to it or hide it in any way. But you have to look at all aspects to this. And again, fire department, police are on this. Good job, identifying it quite quickly, getting police there, setting up the crime scene, already identifying and looking into a home. But, I understand how people reading the headlines in our area are like, hey, it's just the beginning of summer. What kind of year are we in for? And it just goes to show that, don't take your law enforcement, fire department, everyone else for granted. But again, we need to also be our own first responders, be aware, situational awareness, know what's going on. Do our own part when a crime happens near our house. Check your cameras. Check your systems. If your car has cameras, check that as well. But another unsettling event as far as crime in our area. It's 3:32 here at WILK. Time for the news with the great Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 3:38, 83 degrees on this Tuesday, April 29th. So, Ballotgate in Lackawanna County. How about that, huh? That Saturday morning, I started getting pictures of some ballots and some information. Was I aware of the situation? And by midday, kind of had a good grasp of what was going on, that wrongly printed ballots were sent out to, 545 of them at this point. And the ones I got were for Scranton's 16th Ward, Precinct 1. That was the first ones that were sent to me. And it was basically a reprint of last year's ballot. Wrong date, wrong names, wrong everything. And a lot of questions started stirring. And it's interesting how the laws of probability are broken in Northeast Pennsylvania, how this seems to only affect Republicans. I understand mistakes happen. I understand that we're all human and things do go wrong. But the fact that it always leans towards Republicans kind of skews the laws of probability just a little bit. And the excuses really aren't adding up, a few of them. Well, it was a printer's error. And the printer themselves have come out and said, yes, we ran the wrong file. Well, how do you still have the last year's file in your system? I mean, you're a company in Alabama. What purpose would it be to have last year's file still in your system? You don't purge that? That this is, what's the safeguard that this doesn't happen again? Now, in a WVIA interview with County Elections Director Beth Hopkins, she stated that it was a printer's error. But then in the same interview, she said she's unsure why the error occurred. Well, if it's a printer error, it's a printer error. Why are you unsure why the error occurred? They obviously had not purged the last year's file from it. It also says that it appears no one from the election office proofed the ballots. Quote, county election officials did not notice the mistake before mailing the ballots. I understand there's a lot of ballots. I think they said there was like 12,000 of them. But, someone in the election staff did not proof them. At least good enough to prevent wrong ones from going out. Apparently it was not picked up, the elections director said. We certainly don't like when mistakes happen. We work really, really hard to make sure things like this and errors like this don't happen. Well, maybe next time they work really, really, really hard, not just really, really hard. If they work really, really, really hard, maybe this won't happen again. So, yes, the printer obviously ran the wrong batch for the Scranton district. Now, them blaming this on a court case that involving Bob Bolas is just ludicrous. One has nothing to do with the other. Court case or not, I would imagine it's the printer's job to print the right file, and it's the elections office job when they're stuffing envelopes to make sure they're putting the right ballots in the right envelopes and sending them out. So this whole distraction that this was some Republican who's created a lawsuit's fault because they couldn't print them to the last minute, you still printed them within the deadline. So it's pretty ridiculous that that's where they're going to, and that's the way the media, when it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant what lawsuits were there. The printer printed the wrong file, and the elections officials here in Lackawanna stuffed those wrong printed ballots into an envelope and sent them off. Election office officials are tasked with proofing, stuffing, and mailing these ballots. They failed to catch the error. What safeguards will be put in place to prevent this again in the future? And one of my biggest questions that I have yet to have an answer to is, who's paying for the reprinting and the mailing? Now, the printer, this Alabama company, has said that they are reprinting the ballots. They sent them by courier, and they were mailed out first thing yesterday morning, Monday morning. So if you've received your new ballots yet, if you're in that Scranton Ward 16 first precinct or anyone who got a wrong ballot, let me know that you're receiving the new ones. And since the ballots themselves and only the ballots were sent to Lackawanna County to stuff again and mail, who's paying for the additional mailing? Because here, it's easy to get someone else to take the blame. Hey, this is a political firestorm. You know, you guys are just a business. You know, can you take the heat for this? A lot of companies will take the heat for something like this. They aren't going to pay extra for it. So who, in fact, is paying for the reprinting and the mailing of these 545 additional ballots? And that's the question that needs to be asked. Hopefully they put the procedures in place to catch this again. But it's interesting how it always appears to lean one way or the other. And listen, mistakes happen. I don't think anything was done intentionally. It does lead to question the rules of probability that it only seems to affect Republicans here in Northeast Pennsylvania. But, you know, mistakes do happen. What are we doing to correct it to make sure it doesn't happen again? What policies and procedures will be put in place to catch something like this if it does happen again? And who's paying the additional cost for it, the total additional cost? Those are the questions at this point that need to be answered. The ballots will be out in time, hopefully. Everybody will get them. And make sure you get your votes in. It's 3:43 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 3:47 coming up on the Bloomberg Money Minute. But our congressman, some of our congressmen, Rob Bresnahan of the 8th District in Dallas Township, announced his co-sponsorship of Resolution 12, an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to limit the number of terms a member of Congress may serve. Those serving in the House of Representatives would be limited to serving 3 terms. That's 6 years. This is a bipartisan, widely talked about effort that, listen, I think we can all agree on. There needs to be term limits in Congress. There needs to be term limits in a lot of places, more so than there is now. But both now, Senator McCormick and Congressman Rob Bresnahan, have signed on to co-sponsor or spearhead bills that do just that. Public office should not be seen as a lifelong career, but as a service to your community and country, Bresnahan said. Term limits allow for more discussion and new ideas in Congress. As a younger member, I have seen how representation from the younger generation is lacking in term limits would allow for these new generations to voice their opinions in elected capacity. Listen, I'm all on board. Will it get through? Will they get, like I told Senator McCormick when he was on this show, you know, will you start getting the side eye from your colleagues who have been in the Senate for 40, 45 years? And he said he's expecting it. So it's good that we see this move forward. Let's see if it gains traction. As per a study with the Pew Research Center, 87% of adults favor limiting the terms members of Congress are allowed to serve. 87% of adults surveyed by the Pew Research Center say that this is a positive direction and is what people want. With that kind of numbers, how can we not get this over the finish line? How can this not move forward? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it's lifelong careers for a lot of people that don't want this to ever see the light of day. So let's start small with bipartisanship. Let's get something like this across the finish line and put members of Congress on notice that their days are numbered. And if they do good things, maybe they'll get a few more days. But if not, their time is going to end and they're gone. And we'll get someone new in there. Because lifelong members of Congress have not worked out for us well. And I think it's time we all move on, Democrats, Republicans, and independents. It's 3:50, time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Somebody texted and says, it's always a guy named Bob's fault. Yeah, I gotcha. It is. I confess. So the Pennsylvania Game Commission has used sharpshooters to remove deer in parts of Luzerne and Carbon counties recently. Basically, you know, where chronic wasting disease was recently discovered. Now, chronic wasting disease has made a slow creep north. There have been cases of it in the southeast. And they have these things called chronic wasting disease management areas when it is discovered. And there's response plans that needs to be instituted. They just do more testing. They advise hunters and educate hunters on what to look for if they see anyone, any of the animals acting strange. But the Game Commission will be working with personnel from the USDA Wildlife Services to remove deer in the area after receiving approval from 20 private landowners. This is very common. They do this with deer. They do this with geese. They do this with nuisance animals if they're in abundance. And the USDA Wildlife Services does an inspection to say, yes, your services are needed. And you can hire them to come in and do these. A lot of times with geese, they'll wait till the molting season where they're not flying. And they'll gather them in an area and dispatch them. And with deer, they use suppressed means silencers, but they're truly not silenced. They're just suppressed snipers. The sharpshooters conduct a target removal of deer. It's outlined in the agency's chronic wasting disease response plan approved July of 2020. So you can go to the Pennsylvania Game Commission's chronic wasting disease response plan and read it for yourself. And this is a management priority. It's a management option in high priority areas. Measures allows the agency to harvest deer for increased testing along with reduce the population with the intent of slowing the spread of the disease. The animals are tested. The meat that is not questionable is donated to local families or local pantries that deal with that type of meat. Local butchers who deal with wild game a lot of times donate their services to get this meat to these families and these needy families and these pantries that are out there. The agency has used sharpshooters to remove deer in other areas of the state where chronic wasting disease has been found. The recent removal program in the Northeast stems from two cases that mark the first time the disease was confirmed in the area. A deer taken during the 2024 rifle season in Sugarloaf Township was confirmed positive in January, and a second deer found dead in Packer Township, Carbon County, tested positive in February 12th. In addition, chronic wasting disease is also detected in a captive animal on a deer farm in southern Luzerne County. All three positive cases in the region involved adult male deer. So this is part of the plan. Let's reduce the herd so they do not transmit the disease from animal to animal. Let's target areas where the disease could be prevalent and hopefully limit its spread. And if you look at other states to where this has become a concern, and there are quite a few, really all you could really do is suppress this from spreading. There is real no cure. There's no containing it because these are wild animals. They're wild deer. The cases in Carbon and Luzerne counties weren't confirmed until after the mating hunting season had occurred, so the agency couldn't use regular hunters in this instance. A lot of times what they'll do if it happens during the season, the Game Commission will increase permits. Or they'll tell hunters, if you come across a deer that you suspect of CWD and we can confirm it, we'll give you another permit. We'll take that deer from you and we'll give you another permit so you can take another deer. Outside of the season, they're limited to what they can do with only official personnel, in this case, the USDA, Fish and Wildlife. They come in, they're the sharpshooters, they're experienced in this. And they usually do this in the at night or in the evening, just before dusk. And again, use suppressed snipers so the deer really doesn't know what's happening to them, what's going on, and they're not spooked, and they get the numbers that they need for that. As of April 16th, the Game Commission tested 175 deer harvested under the program, and none tested positive for the disease. And again, all the meat for these animals go to a worthy cause, helping food banks, helping needy families, going to programs to where it does not go to waste. And again, I just want to give a shout out to all the butchers that actually process these meat for these organizations and these families. A lot of times go unsung in this process, but it's your donation of processing that meat, your time, your equipment, your ability to do what you do that gets this meat literally from the field to the table for a lot of these families. Venison is a great, lean, healthy meat for any family. If you are not involved, if you know someone who's a hunter, ask, maybe ask for a steak or two or to try some, because it's truly something that's good for you. You have to cook it a little differently because there's less fat, throughout it. But once you learn, get that down, a lot of times you can't even tell the difference. And I understand you probably heard that a lot. But again, as long as it's prepared properly and not overcooked, you're getting a good piece of meat there. So kudos to our state for doing the right thing and trying to curtail this nasty disease and putting the meat to a good cause with our local people in need. It's coming up on 4 o'clock here in WILK. We'll be back.